Hi, everybody. Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. Welcome, Pan Talk Radio down in Florida. I know we have become the voice of Florida down there with our show. And this is August 5th, 2006. Tonight's guest is Clark Galen. I guess it's Garen, a special attorney, and he is an amazing guy. He is, if you look on the BBS radio website, you'll see some of the things that he's done. He had his own radio show called The Think Radio, had his own TV show. He's had the most prestigious guests on that show in the world, and like Pierre Salinger and Pete Bogdanovich and Michael Jackson, the talk show host. He also won a $200 million lawsuit, I think, if that's the numbers are correct, against a Nevada judge named David M. Mosley.
Didn't win it. I lost it.
Oh, you lost it. Okay. But anyway, let me bring on Clark. Come on, Clark. How's it going down there? Where
good.
Are you?
Good. How
are
you
Oregon,
doing, doctor?
Right? How is everything up in Oregon?
Well, it's beautiful here. It's clear here. I'm sitting looking at trees and... You know, when you live in Palm Springs most of the time, that's pretty exciting, getting to look at a green tree with leaves.
It's just been a little warm over there, hasn't it, lately?
In Palm Springs it has. That's why I'm in Oregon.
Yeah, you're smart.
When I went on my trip, I looked at the weather to see where it was under 100 degrees.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. That's smart.
Oregon, Washington, here I come.
Yeah, that's very smart. So anyway, let's go right into that lawsuit thing. What's the deal with that? I know you had a client. I think her name was Jeanette Faye Sadowski.
Yeah, this is.
I know you got somebody out of prison. That's what I understand. Is that true?
That's true.
Yeah. How, explain
Here's
that.
What happened.
Yeah.
We have a constitutional amendment.
Right.
Against double jeopardy.
Right, that's
true. That's one of the
biggies,
and a lot of people think double jeopardy means, well, you can't be tried twice for the same offense.
Right.
But it's a little broader than that. It also means that you cannot be sentenced twice for the same offense.
Yeah, I think that would be common sense.
As most of the time, most of our amendments, most of our Bill of Rights was basically, it wasn't a bunch of people who sat and sat together and dreamed up, well, gee, what should we stop the government from doing?
Right.
It was people who'd been the victims of government excesses and decided, well, okay, we know what we don't want them to do.
Exactly.
But one of the things they used to do in England was they would give you a sentence and you would serve it, and if you were about to get out and they weren't happy, they'd just give you another sentence.
It's sort of what
so
they're trying
keep
to do
you
with child molesters over here.
Pardon?
They're trying to do that over here with child molesters.
Yeah,
that
that's exactly right, only that is frankly a little different situation than what they were doing in England. I mean, you're sitting there. The problem with the child molesters is they're not getting a adequate sentence in the first place.
Yeah, I took 10-4 on that. I agree with that, yeah.
I mean, you know, we now have a lot more research, and what we've learned is somebody who is a child molester will repeat.
Right.
And who are we going to protect, the child or the child molester? But we're really kind of bound by double jeopardy. We can't sentence them twice. The problem is we didn't sentence them properly in the first place.
Right.
And, I mean, I'm one of these people, I sit here and look at, well, gee, what is about the worst crime you can do?
Right.
And I would have to say molesting a child. I can't think of anything much worse.
I really can't either.
I frankly think it's worse than murder. And the reason why I think it's worse than murder is when you kill somebody, it's over for them. They don't suffer anymore. When you sexually molest a little boy or girl, it's not over for them until they die. They may have 60, 70, 80 years of suffering.
Yeah, I've run some drug rehabs in the past, and a lot of my clients were children that molested. And being a single guy for quite a while, even though I've married and had kids and everything, I was single after that. I used to date women that were molested by their father. And they have some serious issues. It's very sad. It's really sad. It's very sad. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and they never get well.
They never get well. That's the honest to God truth. They never get well.
Now, I have one of my friends who I continually have this debate with. and that is we're hearing all about this molesting now.
Right.
Is this something new, or is this something that's been going on for years, and we just started discovering it because people started talking about it?
It's been going on for years, hasn't it?
Well, no, I think maybe it's something new. She grew up in the Catholic Church, and
okay.
she thinks it's been going on for years and years, and nobody knew about it. I don't agree with her. I think that it's something new.
Well, you're a very high-profile attorney, and you know this stuff better than I do, so I have to trust your judgment. You know,
I don't represent child molesters, so
I have absolutely no special knowledge
on this. And even if I did,
Charles Root used to. Remember her?
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew her. She was a friend of Howard Hughes's. My dad knew Howard Hughes very well.
Now there's a guy who I really admire.
Howard?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was cool. My dad worked with him. Yeah, I never met Howard, but my dad knew him very, very, very well.
Well, you know, I heard stories. There's a little hash house down in San Pedro called Dorothy's. It's off of Anaheim Street.
Yeah, I know Anaheim Street in San Pedro. That's a real ritzy area down
there. Yeah. Well, I used to have some boats down there, so I got to know it. And people told me that Howard used to go down to the hangar where they had the Spruce Goose.
Oh, I was in the Spruce Goose once. Yeah.
And he would just take his crew out, take them down to Dorothy's, and buy them all dinner.
That's too funny. That is so funny. That's
Those were people he was comfortable with.
Yeah, I know. I can relate to that. I've never had a problem. I lived in Long Beach my younger days when I worked at NASA, and I used to hang out with everybody in San Peter. I liked it down there.
Yeah.
It was a cool town. It's kind of funky, but it was great.
But it's really kind of startling. You sit and look at this guy, and he had five goals, any one of which would have been enough for any other mortal.
Yeah.
He wanted to be the world's richest man at a moment in time he was.
Yeah.
He wanted to be the world's greatest aircraft designer at a moment in time he was. He designed the Zero.
Yeah.
He just didn't design it for the Japanese.
The H-1 racing plane, which became the Zero. That's very true. A lot of people don't know that. The Army, he tried to sell the Army and said, we don't want it.
Yeah, they didn't want it. So the Japanese took it and cleaned our clocks with it.
Yeah.
He wanted to be the world's greatest movie producer at a moment in time he was.
Yeah, that's
true. He wanted to be, world's richest man, he wanted to be the world's greatest pilot at a moment in history he was.
Yeah, he was.
And he wanted to be the world's greatest golfer, and he never had the time to do that, but he was still probably in the top 10 golfers in the world.
Yeah, my goal is to be the world's greatest golfer, but I yet to play a game of golf. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you and I can get up on that. I can't figure out why I would want to go walking around on a lawn with a little stick chasing a little ball.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyhow, what happened with your client? How'd you?
So at any rate, I was going on. We had double jeopardy. So we had this judge in Nevada who basically decided to resentence people.
Right.
What would happen is he would have many give him a sentence, and like in my client's case, he found out that when he sentenced her, there were other charges pending against her that he didn't know about.
Okay.
So he decided to resentence her. He upped her from a misdemeanor to a felony, 12 months to 36 months.
Wow.
And we filed a motion to correct it.
Right.
He refused.
Yeah.
And it went up to the Nevada Supreme Court. Now, the thing that's interesting is that one of the things about judges is you can't sue a judge unless he acts what they call in a clear absence of all jurisdiction.
Right.
I mean, you can't sue a judge for making a mistake. He's got to intend to do it.
Right.
And not only does he have to make a mistake, he has to make a mistake about whether he has authority over the case.
Right.
So 67 days before this guy put my client in the pokey, he had another case on exactly the same facts that was before him where the Nevada Supreme Court reversed him and told him, hey, you don't have jurisdiction. You can't do this. And 67 days later, he did it again.
Wow.
And then I came in with a motion to correct the illegal sentence.
Right.
And he denied that.
Wow.
So then I filed this big publicity lawsuit, and people started getting a little gun-shy. And he had a couple of times to walk from the civil liability just by letting her go, and he would always, at the last minute, it wouldn't happen. So finally we filed an emergency petition in the Nevada Supreme Court, and they wrote about the nastiest opinion I've ever seen in my entire legal career that said, set her free. And issued an emergency stay, set her free, and then eventually they freed her, and we reversed him, and he resentenced her like he should have in the first place, and then we started a civil case. And we worked our way up through to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah.
They refused to hear it. You know, they don't have to hear anything.
Right.
And the issue was, all the court said, well, he obviously acted in excess of his jurisdiction. He was wrong. But a reasonably prudent judge acting under the same or similar circumstances might have thought that he had jurisdiction.
Right.
And my problem with that is, after you get an order from the highest court in your state telling you you don't, how do you think that you do?
Yeah, exactly.
And no appellate court ever wanted to address that issue.
Right.
So basically what you had was a judge's club. One of them, they weren't going to do anything about the immunity, their immunity. And one of the things that's really why I hoped it would be ripe for the U.S. Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court does not have time to fix every wrong.
Right, unless you're in the Nicole Smith.
Yeah. Well, no, they didn't fix her. They settled. It wasn't about Anna Nicole. It was about a basic difference in what the jurisdiction of the bankruptcy court was.
Right, exactly. I understand.
But with this case, I mean, one of the things we have now is the problem of excess judicial abuses and excess administrative abuses. Look at all these prisoners we got in Guantanamo.
Yeah.
Look at all these tribunals. I mean, we are having a situation where people who have been granted complete immunity are using it to abuse the rights of the individual.
Yeah, I agree.
And it would have been nice to see the Supreme Court step in and say, okay, there are limits.
Right.
The Warren Court that everybody complains about would have taken this case in a heartbeat.
I agree with that.
But, you know, I just saw an editorial written last week by Senator Edward Kennedy.
Right.
And basically he said these two guys, Roberts and Alito, just came and lied to the Senate. They basically said they were going to be centrist, and based on everything they've done and their opinions, they're on a political agenda.
That's sad.
That's sad. That's what they're doing. And I tend to believe we get the government we vote for.
Yeah, now bringing that up, we were talking about loss of constitutional freedom. And I think you have a few things to say about that.
Well, we pretty much, you know, the first problem is,
right,
there is a tremendous attack on the judiciary. Now, you may find that strange for me to complain about that, since I had a case where I was doing it.
Yeah.
But I was attacking a bad decision by a guy, and I'm not going to call him a bad judge. There's one thing I have to say about Judge Mosley.
What's that?
I have sat in his court. He does a criminal calendar. That's all he processes, criminal. 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, the absolute scourge of humanity come before him, and he's been doing it for 25 years.
Right.
I guarantee you there is not enough money in this world to where I would be willing to do his job.
Yeah, I got that.
And the first sentence he gave my client was a real break.
Yeah.
Then he found out about something else. I mean, he still did parole her, or put her out on probation. He didn't immediately put her in jail. He just increased her sentence.
Okay.
And in fairness to him, he thought he was protecting the people of Clark County, Nevada.
Right.
He believed that in good faith. He wasn't just saying, gee, here's somebody who I don't like. I'm just going to be mean to them.
Yeah.
The problem, you know, he was trying to do his job, and it's a very, very difficult job to do, and he overstepped his boundaries, and he really knew he was doing it.
Yeah.
He just knew he could get away with it.
Right.
And he was right. He did get away with it.
Right.
But he wasn't doing it to be evil or to be malicious or to, you know, hurt somebody. He had a good motive.
Right.
Now, to go back to where we were about some of the problems we have with what we're doing to judge. Every time, first of all, every time a judge makes any decision, you got to realize he makes one very temporary friend and one permanent enemy for life.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it.
Well, and it just didn't come from me. I had Ron George, who's our the Chief Justice of California, on.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things he pointed out to me, and I just was one of the things that suddenly stopped. Yeah, he's right.
Yeah.
And so that is what, you know, it is a very difficult job to do. An awful lot of judges become alcoholics.
Yeah, I've seen a few of those.
Very high percentage. It's a hard job.
Yeah.
And most of them, there are very few corrupt judges. There's a lot more teachers who molest children than corrupt judges running out there.
I believe that.
There are some, not many.
Yeah.
And but people want to go after them with a political agenda.
Exactly.
I mean, one of the things I get a kick out of is all these conservatives who yell, I want a conservative judge. I want a hanging judge.
Right.
Like this guy down in San Diego, Cunningham, a good, nice conservative Republican.
Right.
Law and order Republican. Wanted law and order judges until they're charged with something. Then they want to find the biggest ultra-liberal on the bench to hear their case.
Yeah.
I've been practicing law since 1972, and I don't want to have a judge on my case who I know is going to rule for me.
Really?
Because I know that if I know he's going to rule for me, I know someone else is going to rule against me. I want a judge who's going to listen to all the evidence,
right?
Listen and understand all the illegal arguments, and make his best or her best judgment about what the law is and how they should be applied to these facts.
Yeah.
I want a judge who's bright. I want a judge who wants to be fair. I want a judge who's going to listen to everything.
Right.
And I want a judge who's bright enough to understand everything and who's going to work hard enough to where they have mastery of the case. My job is then to present my facts and present my argument, and it's his job to decide who's right.
Yeah,
I don't mind having a case where I lose when the judge explains to me why I lost it.
Yeah,
and you know, anytime you have a case, you know what your strong points are, you know what your weak points are.
Exactly. You know, the thing is, I bet every one of my listeners out there has either been before a judge for some stupid thing, whether it be a parking ticket or a DUI or whatever, or had a friend that has been before a judge. So it just kind of applies to everybody in America.
Yeah, a lot of, you know, fortunately,
everybody.
A lot of people. But anyhow,
yeah.
My problem is people who are looking for judges to have a certain philosophy.
Yeah.
Because when you hire a judge with a certain philosophy, what you're doing is you're stacking the deck. We no longer have justice. You know, when I got into, when I became a lawyer in 1972, the way we got our judges is the governor and his staff would go among the lawyers who had achieved a lot of fame, a lot of success, a lot of money, and said, okay, buddy, time to give back. Go sit on the bench.
Exactly.
And so you had judges who were really good. Now, basically, it's just another step in the district attorney platform. Most of them are district attorneys.
Yeah, I know. I know a lot of them down here in Orange County. I know a bunch of them.
And that's sad because, first of all, a district attorney has spent their whole life on the government workers' cakewalk.
Exactly.
They never had to go actually run a business, make payroll, make decisions. And then they get into being advocates, they get into an extreme philosophy. They start abusing their power.
Right.
And the best example I can give is this case down in Houston of that poor woman who killed her five children.
I remember, that's a big case,
Andrea Yates, yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I sit there and I listen to this, and the big argument is whether this broad is sane or not.
Right. She got off on insanity.
Yeah, well, whether she's sane.
Yeah.
Now, this woman, who from all we've heard is a good, loving mother,
yeah.
takes her kids one by one, puts them in the bathtub, and drowns them.
Yeah.
And then the question is she sane?
Yeah,
did
right.
she know what she was doing? Hello.
I know.
You know, the argument that she is sane doesn't even pass the laugh test.
No.
But this district attorney went and he took the case and he found 12 Kmart shoppers and
yeah.
he got a doctor
yeah.
who lied his ass off.
Yeah.
Went up there and lied and said, oh, well, she heard this defense off a television show, Law and Order, a television show that never aired.
I love it.
And that's the extreme to which the district attorney went to convict her.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Spent all that money when they would have pled to not guilty by reason of insanity. The DA was working a political program. He was abusing his office.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody was asking for this broad to be set free.
Yeah.
And to me, it says something that her family, the people who should be outraged, are really pleased that she's getting treatment.
Yeah.
If they wanted to prosecute somebody, they should have gone after the husband.
Yeah.
Now, he was the one who abused.
Yeah. It was
you know, he's the one, I mean, you know, around here in Nevada, if you leave a pet in a hot car, they charge you with a crime.
They're doing that here in Laguna now, too.
Huh?
They do that here in Laguna Beach now, too.
Yeah, and if you leave a child locked in a car, a hot car,
yeah.
they charge you
yeah.
with a felony.
Yeah.
And this guy leaving these five kids with Andrea was a hell of a lot more endangering of the child than leaving them in a hot car for a few minutes
yeah,
while you go in
a really
grocery store.
You know, that doesn't really come out in this, but that's a very good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like civil responsibility into your marriage.
Well, not into your marriage, as a father.
Yeah,
I mean, fathers
father,
are supposed
father,
to have
yeah.
some responsibility.
Yeah. So now, we were talking about the constitutional freedoms being kind of removed from people.
Well, and that starts with our judges because they, you know, look, we had a judge down in Florida, the guy who was a good conservative Republican, a deacon in his church who heard this, I forget her name, too, but she'll probably give it to me. The lady who removed the feeding tubes from.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one. Yeah, it's been a while. I know
yeah.
exactly. Yeah, that was a big case. Huh? Even Jeb Bush was involved in that case.
Yeah, Terry Schiavo.
Yeah, Terry Schiavo, exactly.
And this judge, because he decided the case and he decided honestly based on the evidence, his good Christian church members threw him out of the church.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Whoa, that's got a little peer pressure.
Yeah, he was shunned in the community.
Wow, I didn't know that. Wasn't
yeah,
news.
All because he entered an honest decision.
Yeah.
He reviewed the facts and the law as he saw them and made a decision. Was he right? Well, look how many damn courts reviewed it, and nobody would change his mind.
Yeah.
Nobody would overrule him.
Yeah.
He had the most examined case probably in history.
Yeah, that was definitely examined.
Yeah,
I totally agree. I followed that case. It reminded me of Jeffrey Figer when he was representing Dr. Kirkonian.
Kevorkian,
you know,
yeah.
The guy that was putting, you know, allowing people to die. And then,
yeah, assisted suicide.
How
but you sit and look at, so for starters, we are trying to get judges who are working an agenda.
Yeah.
Who have their own philosophy. And when we get one, because he had a very conservative philosophy, and even when those guys do their job, we go after them.
Yeah,
I mean, your system is only your judicial system is only as good as the judges who sit there. And when they're working a political agenda, instead of hearing cases, the system gets corrupted.
Right.
And you know, what I always used to say about Chief Justice Rehnquist is that he never met a right he didn't want to take away.
Yeah.
And why do we want people like? I mean, the bottom line is. We have a conservative Christians
right.
who have basically been assaulting the woman's right to have an abortion.
Right, that's been going
and on. All these rights are being taken away because they want somebody who's going to stop the murder of the fetus.
Right.
And that's what it's all about. They don't care about anything else.
Yeah.
But look, now we got a C student from Yale running the place who's close to putting us to World War III, but his base is ecstatic with him because he vetoed a bill for stem cell research.
Right, exactly.
The only good thing I can say is about his veto of the bill of stem cell research is that it won't be there to cure him when he gets sick.
Yeah, exactly.
The only justice in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, and that's not really true because, you know, as a scientist, you cannot stop science.
No, it will go around George Bush.
Well, not only that, but it's going to go around with other countries. Other countries are spending on this like crazy. And we've already lost our industrial base in the world.
Yeah.
Basically, our intellectual base, we used to be the leaders in the intellectual world. Not anymore. They're all coming from India and China.
Exactly. China especially.
And pretty soon, what are we going to do? I mean, everybody's all worried the Arabs have oil. What are we going to do when China discovers how to keep people alive forever?
Yeah.
What's that going to cost?
No, you know what? Speaking of that, you just touched on a subject we talked about earlier before the show. That was the oil situation with the shale. Could you talk a little bit about the oil? You know, the oil?
Sure, I'll be glad to.
That,
you know,
was something I really wanted to talk to you about.
One of the things that is going on is everybody sits and holds their hand. Well, the Middle East is crazy. What do we do about it? What do we do about it? Well, these terrorists are getting all their money from oil. It's
exactly.
All come from Iran. Iran's selling their oil, and it's real easy to fund this stuff when oil's $70 a barrel.
Exactly.
Everybody says, oh, well, they got the monopoly on it. Well, they don't have the monopoly on it. We have, in the United States of America, we have 72% of the world's proven oil shale reserves. They're sitting in the Green River Valley Plateau, which is in northern Utah and southern Wyoming.
Okay, not Alaska.
Not Alaska.
Okay, thank you.
It's in Utah and Wyoming, where we can get to it.
Okay, without destroying national forests.
There aren't any forests in the Green River Plateau. It's desert.
I know it. That's my point.
There isn't anything there.
I know. So we don't.
They don't even have any caribou there.
Yeah, we don't have Greenpeace coming in. Okay, go ahead.
It's landlocked.
Yeah, got it.
And they have perfected the technology to turn oil shale into usable petroleum for $10 a barrel.
$10 a barrel,
and we got enough of that stuff to last us for 200 years.
Whoa.
Now, you might say, well, how do you know that?
Yeah,
well,
know that.
I do my own show, as I told you. I had a retired vice president at Chevron, and he told me about it.
Yeah.
He also told me.
To tell everybody in the audience, you had your own TV and radio show, which was very big, and you've had huge guests.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, anyhow, I had this guy,
yeah.
And we really talked about that, and he knew it, and he knows about it because Chevron tried to develop that the last time the Arabs put an oil embargo on.
Yeah.
And they started working on the technology. The technology is perfected, and it's being used in other countries. They won't use it here, and the oil companies aren't about to go put money into doing this again because they got burned last time. The oil went down. Reagan came into office.
Yeah.
He eliminated the tariff on imported oil. It went down to $6 a barrel.
Right.
It destroyed the economies in the entire Southwest.
Right.
You know, one of the other things people don't talk about is what happened to all our domestic oil production.
Yeah.
The Arabs killed it.
Wow.
See, you got to realize one thing about an oil well.
Yeah.
It runs like a siphon. Have you ever tried to siphon gas from or something from one thing to another?
Yeah.
Once it gets suction, it goes. Once you break the siphon,
yeah,
it's hard as hell to get it going again.
It is.
And basically, that's what an oil well does. It gets the oil coming up, and when you shut it down, it's just like breaking the siphon. And it is incredibly expensive to restart an oil well. So during the late 70s, people were sitting there, gee, I got this oil well running.
Yeah.
It's costing me several $1,000s a month for the privilege of owning this oil well.
Right.
Should I keep paying the monthly money on the hope oil's going to come up, or should I just say screw it and turn it off?
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of them did. They turned it off, and those oil wells were never to start again.
Wow.
And the Arabs knew what they were doing. I mean, everybody talks about Clinton being a milquetoast.
Right.
Well, when oil started going up during the Clinton administration, he opened up something called the Strategic Petroleum Reserve.
Okay. I remember that. Yeah, and the gas prices dropped.
Yeah, the oil went down $10 a barrel. The Arabs saw that, wow, Clinton's putting this stuff on the market. We better flood it.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want
now?
Us
because
doing anything to do anything about that? Energy. Now, what does Bush do? He says, well, gee, I'm going to stop buying it. Now,
yeah.
You know, but when he stopped buying it, they were all filled anyway.
Yeah, it's true.
So you go through this bit, you know, we got, you know, this vice president, retired vice president Chevron was saying, Bush doesn't have an energy policy.
No, he doesn't. I agree with that.
Now, this is a guy who was an oil man. That's how he's supposed to have made his money.
Yeah.
All of your listeners who saw Fahrenheit 9/11 understand that all his oil was backed by the Bin Laden family.
Exactly.
Yeah, the Osama Bin Laden family.
Exactly.
And we got Prince Bandar, also known as Bandar Bush, who goes and smokes cigars with the president in the White House.
Yeah.
South Portico that Harry Truman built. Does that day after 9/11.
Wow.
And so the question is Bush really this stupid?
Yeah.
I mean, he did graduate from Yale, even though he got through as a C student. He's got an MBA from Yale.
Yeah.
He can't be this stupid. He's got to be intending this.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. Crazy like a fox, you know?
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Well, I mean, you go look at this Iraq mess. Now, he's supposed to be a Bible thumper.
Yeah. That's what I've
heard. He talks religion all the time. Why didn't he read the damn thing?
Yeah, he thumped
it. You know, about 3,200 years ago,
yeah,
we had this dude they called Moses.
Right.
And he went and freed the Israelites from slavery.
Right.
And he leads them out of Egypt. He leads them to Mount Sinai. He goes up on the mountain. And he leaves his brother Aaron, the priest, in charge. So the first thing the Bible teaches us is never trust a priest. Because what Aaron does is he collects all the gold, he builds a golden calf, and everybody starts worshiping it.
Yeah, right. I remember that.
First teaching of the Bible. The same thing is Moses comes down, he looks at these people, and he says, okay, you fools.
Yeah.
You don't know how to be free. You only know how to be slaves. So you know what? You ain't going to the land, promised land.
Yeah.
You're going to roam in the desert for 40 years until we have a new generation that knows how to think for itself, that knows how to fight for itself, that knows how to be free. All you know how to do is be slaves.
Yeah.
And what I have to say to George W. Bush, if God didn't have the ability to give people freedom, why does George W. Bush think he can?
Exactly.
The essence of freedom,
yeah,
the essence of any democracy is a willingness by the majority not to interfere with the rights of the minority.
Exactly.
Including women who want to murder their fetus.
Yeah.
Including people who want to have stem cell research.
Yeah.
That's the essence of it. He don't understand it here, so it's not surprising that he didn't understand it in Iraq.
Exactly. That was my next point. I think Iraq's a big amplification of his ignorance.
Yeah, well, basically what he... what they ought to do is pull Saddam out of that trial,
yeah,
give him his country back, and leave him alone to fix it.
Yeah, exactly. That would be funny, but that's about the way it should go. You know, you know what? That's their trip. It's their karma. They need the right to decide their own.
Well, see, you have a problem. Just as I said,
yeah,
neither one of those groups, the Shiites or the Sunnis,
yeah,
they're willing to recognize the right of the other to exist.
Yeah.
They want to unreasonably control the other,
yeah,
which is why they're going to fight each other. They say they're going to have a civil war. They've been having a civil war for 2,000 years.
Yeah.
They were having a civil war with each other when Jesus was walking around.
I know. That was called.
And he wasn't able to do anything about it either.
The Tower of Babylon was right there, you know, south of it's right in that country. That's where the language is split up, you know, according to biblical times, the language is all...
Yeah, well, that Tower of Babel preceded that, Jesus, by a whole lot of years.
Yeah, I know it did, but they were still having problems.
But, you know, the whole point of it is that these people don't like each other. They are never going to like each other.
That's true.
And that's why Saddam was such a brutal ruler. Now, what he did was he went and took power away from the Sunnis.
Yeah.
Who, first of all, let's back up. First of all, we have the Shah in Iran.
Right, there you go.
And he's deposed and Shiites take over.
Right.
And the Ayatollah Khomeini's a Shiite.
Right, okay.
And then you got Shiites running around in Syria.
Yeah, all over.
But they're, you know, controlled by the House of Assad.
Okay.
And then you got Sunnis in the middle of them, Iraq.
Yeah.
Saddam is a Sunni.
Yeah.
And so he deposes the Sunni, and brings in the Shiites.
Right.
So there's, instead of Sunnis separating them, now they're all Shiites.
Right.
And, you know, where, you know, people, one thing people don't realize is this whole mess was started by Bush 1.
I saw that, yeah.
Not Bush 2, Bush 1. Crazy. And everybody was feeling all good about Kuwait.
Yeah, I remember.
Well, Saddam told the Bush people he wanted to go and take Kuwait.
Right.
And everybody was asleep at the switch. But Bush 1 was too busy out on his cigarette boat running around in the bay at Cunnybunkport to know what the hell was going on.
Yeah, okay.
So while he was running his jet boat out there in the Atlantic,
yeah,
burning about 80 gallons of fuel an hour,
yeah,
Saddam was busy taking over Kuwait.
Exactly.
So then he blew his stack, Bush 1 did.
Yeah, I know.
And he says, well, we're going to kick Saddam out of Kuwait.
Right.
Why did we care who was in Kuwait? I mean, what the hell do we care whether it's the Kuwait being run by a Kuwaiti group of dictators or an Iraqi group of dictators? How does that make any difference to us?
Well, they tried to say we had American interests there. That was the whole deal.
Yeah, well, they also said that the people of Iraq were going to throw roses at our feet and kiss our soldiers, and that the Iraqi oil was going to pay all the costs of the war.
Yeah.
Everybody forgets they said that, too.
Yeah, right. Well, Iraqi actually is paying for it, but I don't know whose pocket it's going in, because, you know, they got that ship out there, and they're loading up that underground pipeline that goes out to the middle of the Persian Gulf, and our military boats protect it, and Halliburton ships come in and haul the oil off. Now, how does that work?
Couldn't tell you.
Huh?
That's above my clearance level. I don't think they got enough oil to pay. They certain, whatever they have there, it's not enough oil to pay for over 2,500 American dead.
Yeah, that's true.
I had
a girl on here a couple of weeks ago. Her name is Carrie Swank, and she counsels the widows and the parents of the fallen heroes, and that's a sad story. So, and then right now, like in this war that we got, this Third World War, I think we've got going now
think this war is going to expand out.
Huh?
Unless we really do something stupid.
On that?
We need to let the Israel continue.
Yeah.
I mean, I love watching the Arab public relation machine. It is
amazing.
I agree
with you on that.
It's kind of like, and I'm not going to take credit for this example. I heard it from Alan Dershowitz.
I love Alan Dershowitz. He's my mentor in law.
Yeah. It's like you have a robber.
Yeah.
The bank robber. A bank robber's robbing a bank. He takes a cop comes in. The bank robber takes the hostage. The policeman tries to shoot the bank robber, misses and gets the hostage. So we prosecute the policeman for murder, and we give the bank robber a reward for witnessing the murder.
That's so true. Good old Alan Dershowitz came up with that?
Well, I changed it just a little, but
okay,
it was his concept.
Brilliant. That is brilliant.
I mean, why in the world, and everybody worries about the poor Lebanese. Pay attention. They are sympathetic to these terrorists. They let them in their houses. They let them in their neighborhood. They outnumber the terrorists. I mean, you know, basically what do we have? I think we have maybe 15 Hezbollah killed and 1,000 Lebanese killed. So who outnumbers who?
Exactly.
They're sympathetic. They're basically happy that they're fighting the war. They're just not happy they're having to pay for it.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
And I just don't see, you know, but the important thing is to us, to our interests, that we cannot let Iran and Hezbollah succeed with this campaign.
Yeah.
And one of the things people don't realize, why is Europe being so quiet? Why is Europe calling about the worried about all the Arabs being killed? Well, you know how we got this place is filled with illegal Mexicans?
What?
Illegal Mexicans doing our work?
What? Yeah, go ahead.
Europe is filled with Arabs doing the work.
Yeah, I've been over there. There's lots of them there. That's
they got more Arabs than we got Mexicans over here. And the only difference is in Europe, they have political power, and they now pretty well are, if not in control of the government, the government is paralyzed to do anything they don't like.
Yeah. No, I can see that.
So that's why Europe's being quiet about it. But the number one thing is we let this go. We need to.
But or not, I don't know where who pulled their chain, but they actually had some comments on CNN today. Yeah, France. They said, well, we're going to take a United Nations force, and we're going to go in there and get the Hezbollah out. That's what they said.
Yeah, sure, that's really going to happen.
Yeah, right, I know.
The French are going to go in and die instead of the Israel.
Yeah.
The Israeli soldiers. They're going to let French soldiers die. Yeah, this is really going to happen. All you people who believe that, I'll give you my number. Give me a call. I got a bridge in Brooklyn I want to sell you.
Yeah, I want to buy that, actually, from you.
You know, they need to leave them alone, and I think that they're doing that. And everybody goes on and says, well, gee, Israel picked off more than they can chew. It's been 24 days and they haven't conquered this insurgency.
Yeah.
Duh. We've been in Iraq since for almost 5 years and we haven't conquered it.
No,
And we got a lot more resources than Israel.
Yeah, no, I agree. You don't conquer those people.
You know, and that's really becomes one of the problems. And
I think Vietnam was better than this.
Pardon?
We had a better shot over there. Look what happened. Now, you know, it's a funny thing, looking at Vietnam, what did we create down there now in Saigon? That's a great big tourist resort. It's like another Hawaii. You know, it's like an oasis for tourists in Vietnam.
Well, you know, one of the things is we kept on propping up and a corrupt regime.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's true. But one of the things to me that gets to be really interesting, I mean, one of the things that's really frightening, I watched 60 Minutes last week. Bob Simon interviewed Bin Laden's personal bodyguard.
I didn't get to see that. How'd that go?
Well, let me tell you the end of it. They're looking at the guy's six-year-old son.
Is he still a prisoner, by the way, or not?
No, he's out here. He's loose.
Okay, good.
He's loose. He's got a wife. He's got a family. He's out running around.
So he's not a prisoner anymore. Good.
No.
Sorry to interrupt. Yeah.
And he's a citizen.
Good.
And they interviewed him, and he's got a six-year-old son.
Right.
And his son wants to be, I forget whether he wants to be an engineer, an architect, or a doctor, one of those, or a veterinarian, one of those
Arabs
things.
Really
wants
well
to be a professional. Really bright-looking kid, he says. My greatest goal for my son is for him to be a suicide bomber.
Oh, no.
And he's serious. And
Bob
Simon looks at him and says, what? Yeah. He says, and he asks Simon, well, would you like your son or daughter to be a suicide bomber? Oh, no. Heavens, no.
Yeah.
He says, well, that's the difference between us.
Yeah.
I would.
That's amazing. Yeah,
and I would like to see them die, and so I would be proud to have them die in service to God.
Yeah.
Now, how can you possibly reason and negotiate with people who are that irrational?
You can't. I mean, they have a suicide wish. They don't have a thing called compassion, and they sure as heck lack a thing called love for humanity.
No, I don't agree with you on any of that.
Okay, well, explain to me where I'm
I at. Think these are people who have been sold the ultimate con.
Okay.
They have been sold that God wants them to do this. They have been sold that this is what God wants.
Yeah.
This is God's service.
Right.
So they think they're doing God's work.
Okay, I understand that part.
But and it isn't that they don't have heart. It isn't that they're not human or any of these things. Those things are symptoms of what has happened.
Right.
But it's not the problem. The problem is that they have been brainwashed.
Oh, that's
they
totally
have
true
lost their ability to think and reason, and they have been substituted. Oh, their ability to think and reason has been substituted with this irrational belief that God wants them to kill.
Yeah, I can understand that. And I have a question. Where do they come up with the 72 virgins that are going to meet him in the doorway of heaven? Where did that come from?
I don't know. That's somewhere in the Koran, but I got a much better solution to that.
What is it?
I said, you know, what we really ought to do is go on an advertising campaign.
Yeah.
Who, you know, what we ought to do is offer them all expense paid month visits to the Mustang Ranch, which is the big house of prostitution used to be up by Reno. Because what red-blooded man would want to have 72 virgins when he could have 72 tried and true hookers?
Yeah, exactly. Amen. I love it. Yeah. We should rewrite the Koran immediately.
Well, no, let them have the Koran, but I mean, you know, and on a truthful, on a serious side, that's what a lot of the Arabs do, because they go out of, you know, they have this. I read a very interesting article in the New Yorker by somebody who went by to help them, help this one company in Saudi Arabia, I think, develop a newspaper.
Yeah.
And it was working with women. And interviewing people.
I read the New Yorker religiously, believe it or not.
And what I found, what they found was that the Saudi men are just as perverted as anybody else is.
Yeah.
But they go down to these resorts to go crazy.
Yeah.
And it's because there's no balance in the society,
right,
and they make the women run around in beekeeper suits.
Well,
because, you know, they don't because they really have created the sterile version of sexual relations.
Right.
And it just is not natural, and they can't abide by those limitations. So then they go to the whorehouses out of the country to go let loose and let go of their energy.
Yeah.
That's where the men do. I don't know what the women do.
You know what? I've met a lot of Arab men around here. And I've seen them to be, you know, from Arabia. Actually, Prince Turki used to live down at the Balboa Bay Yacht Club. And these boys can party. I mean, they can party down Americans in the country second. And you talk about drugs, they got it. You talk about alcohol, they got it. And they can do a lot. They have a pretty high saturation rate of, you know, of intoxicity, you know.
It's an article I was listening to. And according to the Muslim religion, the greatest sin you can do is to worship a false god.
Right.
That's their biggest sin. Bigger than murder, bigger than rape, bigger than other, you know, that's their big sin. And so how do you expect them to have values if that's their big sin?
Yeah, I don't guess they would. I guess the Ten Commandments don't mean much.
Well,
if anything, it's true.
Well,
actually, that's just one of the Ten Commandments. So they got one out of ten. Okay, got it. So nine they don't pay attention to.
Well, I don't even think they have ten because, let's see.
Well, we have ten. But one of them is don't worship a false god of the ten. So obviously they only have one, and we've got the other nine.
Yeah, but my point that I'm making is that I don't see how you can be accepting God when you don't follow His rules for living.
Exactly. No, I agree.
If we look at God as our parent.
Yeah.
And take our parent to take a relationship with God the same way as we take a parent a relationship between a parent and a child.
Right.
The parent molds. You're not it says you should honor your father and mother.
Exactly.
Well, when you go and disregard their teachings, you're not honoring them.
Exactly.
When we ignore God's teachings, we're not honoring Him either.
Yeah, that's true. I agree. And it's all coming from within. Regardless of what you call God to be, it's always that inner self that we have.
You know, and it's always one of the things that really amazes me, because you have all these ministers who go out here, and they get huge flocks by preaching hatred of their fellow man.
Oh, yeah.
And I understand. What I wrote an editorial a while back, and I said, If God does not hate, why do men get to preach hatred in God's name?
Yeah. Why?
Yeah. Why do they?
That?
Is that really what God? What God? Are they really serving God's, doing God's work or their own?
Yeah. Well, obviously their own.
Yeah. You know,
which then God gets reduced down to the devil's work.
But then why do people follow them?
Huh?
Then why do people follow them?
Because they're lost and they don't want to find themselves, and it's easier to follow. I always look at it this way. If you look at reincarnation, past lives, and you misbehaved a bunch of times in past lives, when you come into this life, you're a little bit lost in your values. So you look around for someone to mentor you back into truth, reality, and sanctity. And I think that's kind of why we have gurus, and that's why we have a lot of these religions. It's people looking for themselves. And I know we all have our,
I don't think that's what they're looking for. I think they're looking, they're looking for life everlasting.
Well, yeah, everybody's looking for that.
Yeah, that's what they're looking for. Basically, they're trying to get brownie points from the teacher to be able to go have another life or to be able to have a longer, not so much a longer life, but be for the afterlife. They don't want to go to hell. They want to go to heaven.
Yeah, exactly.
And, that's what amazes me about most of these religions, because, if I go out and sell a formula that's going to turn sand into gold, they put me in jail. But when I go out with a collection plate and say, after you die, I'm going to give you eternal life, they let me marry people.
Yeah, I love it.
Anyhow. And by the way, for your listeners, I do believe in God.
Yeah. By the way, you have a website,
I just don't,
too, right?
And I do believe in a religion, and I follow a religion. Actually, it's one of the oldest organized religions. It's a traditional religion. But that just because I follow the religion doesn't mean I stop thinking.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's always good to have a guideline. And, I was a Presbyterian, had a Jewish grandfather, as we talked about earlier. I was christened in a Presbyterian church, St. John's Church in Buffalo, New York. And then after that, it gave me a rounded, theological background. And then I sort of went out on my own and came to my own values. So I just take a little out of everything to make my thing work. That's what I've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it works for me. And I just, biggest thing with me about being, spiritual is being truthful. I try to tell the truth, not tell big lies or small ones. And, just try to keep everything even keel and be honest and upright, not cheat on my girlfriend or my wife. And, be honest to my friends and pay my bills and just, be a, God-fearing kind of, not a God-fearing, but a God-loving person. I don't fear God. I love God. So that's kind of where I ended up.
Well, I have a philosophy about religions. I view all the religions of the world like cars hooked on a train.
Yeah.
Now, the car next to the engine may pull in the station a few nanoseconds before the car in the back.
Right.
But the bottom line is nobody gets off until the train stops and they open the doors.
Exactly.
And I view each religion of the world as one of those cars on the train.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet you're a hell of an attorney. You know what? I'd like to see you in court sometimes. I bet you're a spectacle.
Well, thank you. Compliments will get you anywhere.
Yeah. Well, I'm serious. I mean, I've seen some of the stuff that you've done. We haven't really got into all your cases and things. But, it's really great having you on here tonight.
Well, it's great to be on. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad. And I wanted to talk about, what do you think about, and we got a little bit of time left, not much, but what do you think about the war in the Middle East? Do you think this is actually the Third World War? What are your feelings on it?
Well, Bush is trying awful hard.
Yeah, yeah.
He's trying to bring about revelations, but I just don't think he's going to make it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to spill out of hand because the Iranians aren't ready for it to spill out of hand because they don't have the atom bomb yet.
Yeah.
And they aren't quite ready for it. And they know that if they get too much involved, Israel does have the atom bomb, and Israel will go drop it on them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've heard that if they did anything, they would be using what are called dirty nukes. They don't really make an explosion, but they make people sick and die in a week. That's what
it's like the neutron bomb.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
yeah, basically you kill all the people and the infrastructure's intact.
Exactly. You just walk in and pick up the gold.
Which may not be a bad problem. I was going to get to that earlier. That really is one of the problems with the Middle East. The question is, what are our values as a society? Because when you listen to people like Bin Laden's bodyguard, about the only thing we in the civilized world can do to get control of this and stop other world trade centers is take some dirty nukes over there, kill them all, which we can do now. We may not be able to do that in 10, 15 years, but we can do that now with an impunity.
Yeah, exactly.
Just kill them all, just like Hitler wanted to do with the Jews.
Right.
Only more efficiently. Kill them off,
keep
the oil and the infrastructure. Now the question is, are we willing to commit genocide ourselves?
Yeah.
Just because we're doing it in self-preservation, does that make it okay?
Yeah.
Well, and those are some real ethical problems we have to answer about ourselves.
Yeah.
If you'd asked me whether we could do that in 2000, I'd have said no. This Iraq war has changed my view of our ethics and morals as a country. I look at how we came out of World War II. At the beginning of World War II, there were five democracies on the face of the earth.
Right.
During the Cold War, democracy became the things, and we became basically the leaders of the world.
Right.
Everybody looked up to us.
Yeah.
And then we got this C student out of Yale who came in and who decided to finish the mess that his daddy started.
Right.
Even his daddy had enough sense not to want to own Iraq.
Right.
And he went in there with and created probably the worst mistake in our foreign policy.
Right.
But to me, he forgot about who we were. We don't go to war with people who don't attack us.
Right, exactly.
And Saddam never attacked us, never would have attacked us.
Yeah.
It just would have never happened. And but you went around. When he went into Iraq, three out of four people thought that Iraq was responsible for the World Trade Center.
Yeah.
And that's because Bush and his people put it out. They kept selling it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's exactly what Hitler lot did. Hitler told a lie. He told a monstrous lie. He repeated it loudly. He repeated it often. And eventually people started believing him.
Yeah.
That's exactly what Bush has been doing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the burning of the Reichstag was by Hitler. You know, the start of World War II was by Hitler, by shooting his, you know, prisoners. You know, his own people dressed up like Polish, you know. I mean, everybody, I understand all that.
Sure.
I guess we're running out of time. We run out of time, Don? Don is our station host here. I guess we're pretty much done. Are you still there? Hello?
I'm here.
Okay, I wasn't sure because we're getting to the end of the show, so I'm going to probably sign off now. And Clark, I'd like to have you on again sometime.
Sure, I'd love to. Anytime.
Yeah,
it's a pleasure.
I'm going to give you a call during the week at some point and hook up with you on a regular personal level because I'd like to talk to you about some things I'm involved with. I think we can have some fun together. You sound like a fun guy.
I try.
Yeah.
Hey, beats working for a living.
Yeah, I know. So anyway, thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Time, that hour sure went fast, didn't it?
Yeah, it was very fast. You know, you're a quick study. And I hope you have fun up there in Oregon. I hope to keep the weather up. It's cool up there, you know.
I sure will. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks a lot. And you've been listening to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show on bbsradio.com and WTAN Radio in Florida, 1300 AM and 1400 AM. And until next week, actually next Monday, because my Tuesday night show has changed, it's Monday afternoon. Have a great evening, all of you, and thank you for contributing to my happiness and success. Goodbye.